Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome into another Stanley Cup playoff edition of Unleashing Fury on thefanrichmond.com. I'm your host, Jordan Bondurant. Coming up later in the show, an interview with Ben Raby of the Capitals Radio Network. And is fighting really that bad in the sport of hockey? Is it really? You'll hear my thoughts on that coming up later on. But first, we head back to Game 2, which was played back on April 13th. Back at Capital One Arena in D.C., and a little bit of history was made at the end of Game 2. Brooks Orpik became the oldest player in NHL history to score a playoff overtime goal at 38 years, 199 days. It was his fourth career postseason goal, coming at 1:48 of the extra period, and it gave Washington a 4-3 victory and a 2-0 series lead. Orpik also became the oldest player in Capitals history to score a playoff goal. The previous Washington record holder in that department, Justin Williams, who is suiting up for the Carolina Hurricanes. So it all comes full circle. Game 2 started off with Nicklas Backstrom picking up where he left off in Game 1, starting the Caps scoring in the first period. Backstrom created space between him and Justin Falk as Alex Ovechkin threw a pass to the stick of Backstrom, who tapped the puck home for his third goal of the playoffs. Everyone has come to know Ovi as the prolific goal scorer he is, and for good reason. If he can remain healthy and keep his game at the current level it is, he very well can surpass Wayne Gretzky as the NHL's career goal scoring leader. But in the case of the Backstrom goal in Game 2, and you can see going back even to last year's Stanley Cup run, that Ovechkin is more willing than not to give the puck up to a teammate who might have the better scoring chance. Here's Backy after the game talking about the grade 8.
A lot of people and a lot of players out there expect him to shoot all the time. So when he comes like that and dishes puck, I mean, it creates so much room for other guys too. So he's not just a great goal scorer, he's a great setup man too.
TJ Oshie got in on the scoring a few minutes later on a feed from Evgeny Kuznetsov. In hockey, you know about the head faking and the deking, but Oshie went a little more unconventional in his goal, giving Washington a 2-0 lead. As he raced in towards Peter Mrazek, Oshie almost did a crane-like karate kick with his leg. The leg fake seemed to open the door for the U.S. Olympic hockey legend as he was able to put the puck past Mrazek and in the net.
It was on purpose. You know, I don't know. It's just, I've done it in the past. Usually it doesn't really work out. And I don't know. Heat of the moment, it was just my first reaction. And fortunately, I was able to get it the puck far enough to the weak side to squeak inside the post.
At that point, Washington appeared to be in the driver's seat, but Carolina wasn't going to wait until the third period to crawl back into the fray. Lucas Walmart got the Canes on the board at 15:54 of the first with a goal right in front of Braden Holtby. Washington challenged the goal, claiming Holtby was interfered with, but the officials upheld their initial call on the ice, and the score was 2-1 at the end of the first period. Carolina wasn't done, though, as they draw level in the second on Sebastian Aho's first career playoff goal. Aho found himself in the right place at the right time as a slap shot from Justin Williams bounced off the boards behind Holtby and came right to the stick of Aho, who banked the puck off of Holtby and in. To me, the second period was where you started to see the offense of Washington begin its downward trend. Washington just didn't get comfortable with the puck in the second period at all. The Caps were even gifted a 5-minute power play as Michael Ferland was assessed a 5-minute match penalty for an illegal check to the head of Nick Dowd. Some will argue that the hit on Dowd seemed like a routine hockey play. Others, given the age of safety and the data and knowledge surrounding head injuries and full contact sports like hockey, will say that Ferland needed to be sent off the ice to send a message that that hit would not fly. But Washington couldn't do anything on the extended power play and even took a penalty in the final minute of the power play, washing out the remaining time on the man advantage. And credit Carolina head coach Rod Brind'Amour and his staff for making the necessary adjustments as they seem to flip a switch from the second period of Game 2 on through Game 3. We'll get to Game 3 in just a minute, but let's finish talking about Game 2. In the third period, Washington jumped out in front on Tom Wilson's first goal of the playoffs. Again, we talked about Ovechkin's passing, and that was evident on Wilson's tally also as Ovi fed Wilson, who was trailing in from the top of the blue line, to the far circle, and Wilson went 5-hole on Mrazek for the go-ahead goal. But the lead would last about 6 minutes before Jordan Staal netted the equalizer with 5 minutes left on the clock. The game would head to overtime, and then Orpik would end it not even 2 minutes into the period.
It always feels good. I mean, I think we get this time of the year. I'm probably not counting on for too many goals, but I think if you want to have long runs, you need everybody kind of chipping in and doing things they don't normally do. So it always feels good when someone comes out on top.
Then came Game 3. Carolina was obviously excited to get home, as it was their first home playoff game in 10 years, and they really couldn't afford to get into a 3-0 hole in the series with a loss. And the Hurricanes absolutely lived up to the expectations. They dominated every facet of the game, from the time of possession to hits, and obviously on the scoreboard as Carolina recorded a 5-0 shutout to pick up a win in the series. Washington managed just one shot on goal in the second period, going almost 25 minutes before they recorded another shot on goal. They had 7 in the third period when the game was completely out of reach, and Carolina outshot the Caps 45-18. For more on Game 3 and what we should come to expect from the Caps in Game 4, I now bring in Ben Raby of the Capitals Radio Network. Ben will have pregame, postgame coverage, as well as in-game updates alongside John Walton and Ken Sabourin, who will have the call for Game 4 from Raleigh. Ben, welcome back to Unleashing Fury, and thanks so much for taking some time to chat with me today.
Yes, sir. Good to be back, Jordan.
Right into it, the sense that I got from following coverage of the team getting ready for this series against Carolina was that this Capitals team was relaxed, they were very businesslike, and not really overly excited to start their 2019 postseason. This team has had its moments of brilliance on display in the first two games of this series in D.C., but really just flat struggled in Game 3. We know how ineffective and unproductive they were with the puck offensively in the loss. So my question to you is, what was the atmosphere of the Wednesday practice in Raleigh like? Was there a larger sense of urgency and pace as Todd Reirden put his players through drills? Was there an added level of enthusiasm from the players? What did it look like to you?
Yeah, I would say, and in speaking to a number of the players after practice, there's still a kind of cool, calm, and collected demeanor about them. I don't think anyone is pushing the panic button or anything like that just yet. Capitals still maintaining the 2-1 series lead, and I still think there's a quiet confidence to them given what they went through last spring and continuing to reap the benefits from that postseason run. They dealt with adversity. They dealt with some difficult situations last spring en route to the title, you know, blowing a 2-0 series lead against Tampa in the East Final. They trailed that series 3-2. They were able to rally. Examples like that that they still have in the memory bank that they could draw on. I don't think losing one game here to Carolina is necessarily going to frazzle them too much. Obviously, the nature of the defeat, the 5-0 loss that it was, you know, it does raise the antenna to an extent, but I don't think there's too much panic just yet. That being said, we could tell you some lineup tweaks that the Capitals will be making for tomorrow, juggling up the lines, the trios, a little bit, and we'll see if that's just the right combination to light a little bit of a spark, because obviously you don't want to return home coming on Saturday tied 2-0 with momentum seemingly at that point on Carolina's side.
I asked Todd Reirden after the loss that this would be a game they would more or less throw away and try to forget about, considering how lopsided the result was. And Reirden made it clear that it wouldn't be the case, as there's always something to be learned from a game, whether it's a win or a blowout loss. What do you think the lesson learned from Game 3 was, and how did that carry over into the Wednesday practice, if at all?
Yeah, I think one of the red flags from the other night that has certainly been acknowledged is the Capitals can't be spending that much time in their own zone. And that's maybe easier said than done, but there's an acknowledgement that the Carolina Hurricanes, among their strengths, among what led them to success during the year, is when they gain the offensive zone, when they get working on the forecheck, as Braden Holtby described them in a complimentary way, he said they could be annoying. They could be a handful when they get in below the circles and start working down low. And the Capitals really saw that firsthand, particularly in Game 3 the other night. The Hurricanes gave them all they could handle. The Capitals had a very difficult time getting out of their own zone. The breakouts were an issue the other night for the Capitals. They're very aggressive on the forecheck, Carolina. If you can combat that forecheck, if you can break out of your zone cleanly and start to head up ice, the Capitals are optimistic they could potentially take advantage of some odd man rushes in transition, because what Carolina does so well on their forecheck is they really make it a five-man forecheck. In other words, their defensemen are chipping in or pinching in, and they're very aggressive. But should you get the puck out of your own zone, you could potentially go the other way in transition, as the Capitals have. They did that certainly in Games 1 and 2, a number of their even-strength goals coming as a result of what I just described right there. So, look, the thing that I think they could pick up from the other night and what they're seeing in video is how often they were pinned in their own zone. And an area they'll be looking to clean up for tomorrow night very much are their breakouts, which starts with the blue liner, starts with the Capitals defenseman, but they need help. They need help from their forwards coming back, giving them looks for passes. And there was an acknowledgement both at practice and then afterwards in the dressing room that it is an area they're aware of, and you know, one that they need to clean up for Game 4.
John Carlson explained that it essentially starts with the defenseman's ability to move the puck ahead or keep the puck in on dump-ins and play it to the forwards. He said that after the game on Monday. Do you feel Carlson sort of hit it on the head there? And do you think that they sort of made that a focal point as you sort of alluded to in practice?
Yeah, again, it starts with the blue liners. It starts with the likes of Carlson when they retrieve the puck down low, but a consensus as well is they need support. They need help from the forwards coming back, and again, giving them those options and giving them those looks to combat, again, a very aggressive Carolina forecheck. So a little bit of the old five-man unit there as far as the Capitals are concerned in getting cleaner breakouts and, you know, starting the rush up ice, because really the other night they were pinned inside their own zone far, far too much.
You mentioned sort of a little bit of a tweak in the line pairings. I understand TJ Oshie will be now on the top line with Backstrom and Ovechkin. Looking at that and sort of all the other changes that Reirden and his staff made, who do you think needs to step up the most in Game 4 and even in Game 5 back in D.C. on Saturday?
Yeah, I think not necessarily any one individual, but you can sort of clump the bottom six together, if you will. And when you think back to the success of last spring, you think of some of the quote-unquote unsung heroes, the contributions they were getting offensively from the likes of Lars Eller, Devontae Smith-Pelly, Andre Burakovsky with his two goals in Game 7 in the East Final. They haven't had that 3 games into this series against Carolina. With the exception of Lars Eller's empty net goal to seal Game 1 last week, you're looking at Brett Connolly without a point, Burakovsky still seeking his first point, Jacob Vrana still seeking his first point of the series. Same with Carl Hagelin. There are a number of guys who, you know, even thinking back to their productivity in the regular season, Brett Connolly a 20-goal scorer, there's an acknowledgement from some of those fellas I just referred to that they need to get going offensively. And if they do get going offensively, obviously, given the way the likes of Backstrom and Ovechkin have been able to find the net so far this series, you'd like to think that bodes well. And I've been saying throughout this series, Jordan, even before the series started, among the areas the Capitals, at least on paper, have an edge and an advantage in, it's the bottom six depth. The Carolina is very much a top-heavy team, and the Capitals, when you start to look at the bottom six forwards, it is an area that they could potentially take advantage of, and they haven't up until this point, but obviously a lot of series left to potentially change that narrative.
All right. Put on your prediction hat if you can and gaze into the crystal ball for me. What happens in game four, and do you anticipate this series going more than five games?
Well, let's start with tomorrow. I would anticipate a strong response from Washington tomorrow. And, you know, particularly keep tabs on the first period, trying to get that crowd out of it. They were very energetic. The Hurricanes obviously fed off that in their Game 3 win on Wednesday. I would think the Capitals tomorrow, if they could jump out to a better start, a stronger start, maybe take an early lead, I would see them, you know, maintaining that and preserving that, not unlike Games 1 and 2 where the Hurricanes had a little fight back. But if you put Carolina behind, if you get them chasing the game, you'll put yourself in good position. And that being said, Jordan, if the Capitals can win tomorrow, I would anticipate they could close it out on Saturday. All that being said, if the Hurricanes win tomorrow, boy, oh boy, buckle up, because this thing, well, we know for sure would be going six, but wouldn't surprise me at that point if it even goes the distance.
All right, one last question before I let you go. The Alex Ovechkin fight with Andrei Svechnikov has re-sparked the debate on fighting in hockey. Do you think the NHL should do more to limit or eliminate fighting? And do you think that because Svechnikov got hurt as a result of the fight, that this is sort of the only reason it's brought the anti-fighting sentiment to the forefront?
Well, I think that the anti-fighting sentiment, it's been at the forefront for some time. I think maybe this just maybe reignites the debate, if you will, but it's obviously been a conversation piece for some time. I think at the end of the day, Jordan, though, the fighting has been decreasing in the NHL over the past few years. We're seeing less and less of it. Is that a sign of what ultimately could come and they get rid of fighting altogether? Maybe. I think the fact that it is still in there to a degree helps police the game. I do believe that. I'm in that camp, and I think the fact that we see it less and less, we're seeing far fewer of the quote-unquote staged fights that we used to see even as recently as 10, 15 years ago. Those are being eliminated. The few fights that we do see, often they've been building. They're rarer and rarer, but often there is a reason behind them, if you follow. They've been building maybe over a number of games, over the course of a regular season series, and if ultimately players feel that's the way to settle a score or two, I don't necessarily have an issue with it. That being said, I anticipate the trend is going to continue, that we're going to see fewer and fewer fights in the league. And if ultimately, it's almost as if, Jordan, that they're almost getting rid of the game themselves. They don't need the NHL to step in other words, the players. There's been fewer and fewer of them. This really was a rare instance the other night. And that being said, I don't think anything happens for another few years until the next collective bargaining agreement comes up. But I think until then, I think the trend of fewer and fewer fights just continues to sort of play itself out as it has over the past few years already.
That is Ben Raby of the Capitals Radio Network. Once again, you can listen to him and John Walton and Ken Sabourin with all the coverage from Raleigh and in D.C. the rest of this series. Ben, I know you got to jump, so thank you very much for the time. As always, I really appreciate it, and I will see you Game 4 and Game 5.
All right, so we'll look forward to that. Appreciate it, Jordan. Thank you.
Once again, that was Ben Raby of the Capitals Radio Network. I want to thank him for taking some time out of his schedule to speak with me. And he made some interesting points on the issue of fighting in hockey. And I just can't believe, really, the outcry as a result of this Ovechkin-Svechnikov fight. And really, I don't know. I don't really have a lot of words to really describe how I feel about the anti-fighting sentiment. Fighting has been a part of the game for years and decades, and it really has become one of the things that fans really, you know, even novice fans, come to games expecting to see. You probably see it more on the minor league level and in the professional ranks that are not NHL. But, you know, it's kind of like NASCAR fans, or even people that don't follow the sport of NASCAR will go to races expecting to see crashes. They want to go see the crashes and see cars get torn up and bang against each other. And that's why people go to hockey games for the physicality. they like to see the attitude and the passion from players. They like to see the emotion spill out onto the ice. They like to see guys duke it out from time to time. And sure enough, Ovechkin really duked it out with Svechnikov. And Svechnikov, who is a rookie, the 2018 top draft pick from the Hurricanes, paid the ultimate price for it. And, you know, you heard after the game, Ovechkin said that Svechnikov challenged him. Rod Brind'Amour said he didn't think that was the case. He just thought it was more or less a case of Ovechkin picking on a guy who's really never fought before and really just trying to hurt his team in a way, considering Svechnikov had 2 goals in game one and really was a real contributor for the Hurricanes moving forward. But I just think, you know, that as Ben said, the players are going to sort of limit the fighting themselves. I agree with Ben. I don't think the league really needs to do anything to step in to try and deter players from dropping the gloves. And, you know, if a player really wants to settle something with an opposing player, that's how you do it. And, you know, you do still have the war of the words in the media, and I get that. That's all part of the grandstanding, and it's all part of telling a story in the NHL. But I just love the fact that when it comes down to it, you know, guys are willing to fist fight and really put their bodies and everything on the line to either try and spark a rally from their team, which I think was part of what Ovechkin was trying to do in the first period. At that point in the game, it was still 1-0 Carolina. But at that point in the game, it was clear that Carolina was the better team. So will we see any carryover in game 4 or even game 5 as a result of all the hoopla surrounding Ovechkin and Svechnikov? That remains to be seen. We'll obviously have to watch and see what happens on the ice, but I doubt you'll see any of the Hurricanes players go after Ovechkin from the onset. Ovechkin, not really a fighter in his own right, and I think I saw a stat that said that was Ovechkin's first fight in almost a decade. So that just says a lot about a guy like, you know, he's not the enforcer type, but if he needs to send a message to his teammates, he will do whatever he possibly can, and that includes picking a fight with anyone on the ice. So with that being said, I'm going to leave it to you, the listener. Let me know what you think of this episode. Let me know what you think of the issue of fighting in hockey. Shoot me a tweet at J_Bondurant. Let us know on the Sports Radio 910 The Fan Facebook page and on Twitter at 910 The Fan. Let me know what you're thinking. Let me know who you're rooting for, whether you want Carolina to rally and win this series or whether you want Washington to move on and face old coach Barry Trotz and the New York Islanders, who just recently swept the Pittsburgh Penguins in their first round series. That's going to do it for me and this episode of Unleashing Fury. Keep it here on thefanrichmond.com, facebook.com, 910 The Fan, at 910 The Fan on Twitter for all your coverage of this Caps-Canes first-round series. I look forward to bringing you more as the playoffs roll on. Until then, Game 4, Thursday night, 7 o'clock. Game 5, Saturday night, 8 o'clock at Capital One Arena in D.C. All those games, you can find TV information, radio information over at capitals.nhl.com, nhl.com, and of course thefanrichmond.com. So once again, I'm Jordan Bondurant signing off. Thank you guys so much for listening, and let's go Cats.
Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.